Welcome to the Rutabaga Roadhouse, broadcasting from Ithaca in the heart of upstate New York's Finger Lakes region. My name's Tracy Craig. Joining us in the studio today is fiddler Lori Hart, and she has brought along with her a couple of interesting instruments that come from Scandinavia. Lori, I'm glad you could come today. Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Tell us about the instruments that you have brought along. Let's start with the one that you're holding right now, tucked under your right arm.
Okay. Well, it's a Norwegian Hardanger fiddle. Hardanger is one of the fjords in western Norway, and it's the name of an embroidery style, so you might have heard the word there before if you haven't heard it about the fiddle. Looks a lot like a violin, except it's got a longer scroll, a lot more pegs, because there's 9 strings instead of 4. Some of them are sympathetic understrings, which ring along with the overstrings when I bow them. And it's got a lot of decorations. It's the fanciest looking violin I've ever owned, for sure. It's got ink rose drawings all over it. And the fingerboard and tailpiece are inlaid with ivory and bone and mother of pearl.
And then at the top, at the head, there's something very interesting going on. A carving, is that a dragon?
Yeah, I believe it's a dragon. Some people call it a lion. It's some kind of a kingly figure. It's got a crown, and the interesting part is he's got a little ivory tongue sticking out, and he's licking the tip of his own nose.
How old is that instrument?
This very instrument was built in 2001, but this kind of instrument goes back to the 1750s at least. The oldest one they've found in Norway is from 1751, I think.
Hmm. Well, we'll talk more about the history of it, but I think our listeners would like to get a sense of what it sounds like.
Yeah.
How about a tune?
Okay, here comes a springer.
As you play that, Lori, there are only 4 strings on the top,
right,
that you are sounding. Describe what's happening, because I'm hearing other notes there.
Yeah. Well, the 4 strings that you touch with the bow sound like this. And then underneath, we've got 5 more strings, and I'll pluck them, which is the way that you tune them. So those are the understrings, and they're tuned to a lot of the same notes that the overstrings are tuned to. So if I play just a single overstring and stop my bow on the string, you hear an after ring, and that's the understring ringing along. That's a good way of checking whether it's really in tune. And so each of them has a kind of partner down underneath.
It's a hard instrument to keep in tune.
Oh, Lord, yes. It requires great patience and skill, probably dexterity, to tune it really well. My first teacher told me that as I'm holding the fiddle, I should feel it vibrating constantly in my hand. That's kind of a key to knowing whether you've got it in tune, and a key to the kind of bowing that you do, which is very smooth, kind of like an engine. You keep it rolling. You keep it vibrating. You never do anything harsh or sudden with the bow, which would disturb the vibrations.
How is that different from bowing a regular violin?
or what we think of an American style or European style violin.
There's a lot of ways to bow a regular violin, and there's really one way to correctly bow a Hardanger fiddle. Probably sometimes you use this bowing technique on a regular violin, but there's lots of other techniques you can use too, including hard attacks and stops and little silences and, you know, bouncing. You never bounce the bow on the Hardanger fiddle.
And there are a lot of different tunings that you can use for the Hardanger, isn't that
there
true?
There are, yeah. I'm being merciful to you and staying in just one tuning so you don't have to wait while I retune. But yeah, there's about 20 different tunings.
Including one called troll tuning, did
yes,
I read that right?
Yes, there yeah. is.
What's the tuning that you're in today?
It's, well, it's a little complicated how to name it. You could say it's ADAE with an A. That's from low to high.
And sound the notes if you would.
Yeah. But if anybody's at home plunking this out on their piano to see, you'll find that my A is not really an A. It's probably around a B. And that's kind of one of the really fun things that blows musicians' minds about this instrument is that you don't actually have to tune it to a certain pitch. You can kind of experiment and find the best resonance for your particular piece of wood. So the A is not really an A. It's somewhere between a B flat, B, C, maybe even as high as C sharp.
So what happens when you play with other people?
I knew you were going to ask that. If you're having a lesson or if you're in a Hardanger group or whatever, probably people just choose B. That's the most common. It's mostly a solo instrument. The setting that we're in right now is the most typical for hearing this instrument. It's a single fiddler playing maybe for people dancing or for people listening.
Give me an idea about how long this instrument has been around.
Well, I don't think anybody really knows for certain, but it's probably as old as the violin, and it may, which, you know, goes back to the 1500s. It may have been a slightly different shape. Probably the shape of the Hardanger fiddle was influenced by the European violins that undoubtedly showed up in Norway. Norway is a part of Europe that's kind of isolated. It's very far north. There's, you know, a sea between it and everything else except for Sweden, and it's quite heavily forested compared to the rest of Europe, very rugged land. People were pretty isolated there, so they didn't have a lot of contact with European music, you know, except maybe in Oslo. Maybe the royalty had a lot of connections over there. But the farmers and the people out in the countryside, they had this tradition going way back, and it wasn't much influenced by what was going on elsewhere. The rhythms are really unusual and specialized to the different parts of Norway. Norway is kind of divided into two parts linguistically and culturally as well as musically. And you've got the West and Telemark in the South, which are the Hardanger fiddle area. And that's an area where a certain dialect of Norwegian is spoken. And then the East and the North, like from Oslo and then all the way up into basically almost to the North Pole, you've got a different dialect of Norwegian, more similar to Danish, and they play the regular fiddle there. So you've got two different fiddles, two different languages, and then even within each of those areas, the different valleys, the different river valleys or areas have a different style of music and dance. What I'm doing is sort of the typical American thing of trying to be a jack of all trades, and I play this, and I play regular fiddle, and we've got another Scandinavian instrument we're going to bring out later. Most Norwegian musicians stick to their own turf. They play one instrument and not all the music of that instrument, but maybe stick to their own home area.
Is there one style that you feel particularly drawn towards, or are they equally?
I seek out instruction wherever I can. I've been to Norway twice, and I've been to a music camp down in West Virginia a couple summers where they have teachers from Norway. But usually each time I go, it's to a different place, or each time I meet a teacher, it's a teacher from a different place. And I just play the tunes that I like, and I do play for dancing. There are people here in Ithaca that dance Norwegian dances, and also around the East Coast at, you know, various festivals and camps that I get hired to play at.
That's fiddler Laurie Hart joining us at the Rutabag Roadhouse today. My name's Tracy Craig. We're learning a little more about music with its roots in Scandinavia. Right now, music from Norway. Laurie Hart.
The thing that's really unique about Hardanger compositions is that instead of having a long phrase which is repeated and having only two or three of those making up the piece, it's got lots of little short nuggets which get looped around. It's kind of a loopy form of concocting a tune. You have these little two-measure phrases maybe. You start to repeat them again, but it changes just a little bit, and it goes somewhere else, and then you repeat that for a little while, and then some new note creeps in or some new bowing pattern, and that transforms to something else and kind of goes that way through the whole tune. The first tune I played was from Hallingdal, and this one is also... This one is called Sølvknut.
Would people dance to that tune that you've just played?
Yeah, definitely. It's called Sølv Knut, probably written for a dancer called Knut. Sølv is silver, so he might have had silver buttons or silver buckles or something. It was Sølv Knut's dance tune.
But it's also a very silvery kind of sound, you know, that high, brilliant sheen, very different from the sound you get with a violin.
Oh, God, it really is. There's also, in that tune, you might have heard kind of some blue notes, notes that weren't either a black or a white key on the piano, but somewhere in between the cracks. A few kind of neutral G's and up on the E string there. That note. It's not a G, it's not a G sharp, it's treading the water somewhere in between. Not a mistake in this case. Although you wonder when you're learning these tunes and the teacher's playing a note that's clearly not one or the other, sometimes you have to ask, is that what you mean to play? You know, it's not important whether it's a G or a G sharp. It's somewhere in there, the way you feel it at that moment.
Is a lot of this music for the Hardanger passed on orally, or is it written down?
Definitely. Well, both. The Norwegians have been very good, the Swedes as well, about documenting their heritage. So there are many, many thick volumes from each region of the country that document the fiddle tunes. People went out and collected them starting maybe around 1910 and up into the present time. So you have a lot of the old fiddlers that were documented before they died, or their repertoires. But really, it's a living tradition. It's very difficult to write these tunes out. You mentioned the crazy rhythms, and the one I just played is a great example of that. I mean, you could write that tune out, but the next person that hadn't heard it, who tried to read it off the page, probably wouldn't get the rhythm right, because it's not mathematical. I mean, you would write it in 3/4 time, but the three beats are not equal to each other. And within the beat, they're not always subdivided in the same way. So it really needs to be learned. And amazingly, the bowing is also passed down, the bow direction. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not true of any other fiddle style that I know. I've learned, you know, a lot of Irish tunes, all kinds of tunes up in French Canada. There may be patterns that are typical of the bowing, and you can kind of learn those to help you sound in the style. But in the Hardanger territory, you actually learn the bowing with the tune. And a big part of being in a class or working with a teacher is watching the teacher's bow and getting your bow to go in the same direction at the same time. And that's very hard to remember. So it's kind of nice that the tunes are written out, that there is a way to write it out, because you can capture the bowing that way. But the actual rhythm you have to remember or get from a recording or in person.
Well, we're primarily talking about this instrument and how it has been used as a folk instrument, but it also shows up in some classical. Doesn't Edvard Grieg make use of this fiddle sound as well?
Yes. He took melodies from the Hardanger fiddle and created piano pieces based on those melodies. There's an interesting story I heard that a fiddler called Ivan Groven, he was somewhat of an academic, but before he got into the academic side of music, he grew up in very much of a folk environment, didn't have a piano, never really heard classical music. He grew up listening to and playing Hardanger music. He got to college age or so, and he heard these piano compositions of Edvard Grieg, and he said it made him so uncomfortable. It made him feel sick because he felt that Grieg had taken out the variations of rhythm and pitch, what I was talking about, how things are in between a G and a G sharp. You can't do that on the piano. You've only got the black and the white keys, right? And he felt that so much was lost and that the world was getting to know Norwegian music through Grieg, Norwegian folk music, and that this was a big mistake. He said it sounded out of tune to him. The piano actually sounded out of tune to him because he'd grown up listening to Hardanger music all his life. And so he took it upon himself to try to write concert pieces for Hardanger fiddle, and including duets and trios, which did not exist in the traditional repertoire. So yeah, the Norwegians talk about this and debate it, and they get it up on the concert stage. And of course, Ole Bull was a very famous violinist who came to America from Norway, and he was a famous classical violinist. You know, people just flocked to hear him, and he also played Hardanger fiddle. So a lot of people got to know, you know, around the turn of the century, got to know the music from him playing.
How did you come to be interested in the Hardanger fiddle?
Through dance, definitely through dance. In that case, it's usually a solo instrument and couples dancing around the floor. Sometimes the fiddler sits in the middle of the floor and people dance right around him. I went to festivals in Norway where there were folk dances in little cabins without electricity, just flickering candles kind of set around the room, and the fiddler on a chair in the middle and five or six couples dancing around him. Just, you know, in the middle of the night, just a beautiful, beautiful feeling. The craziest thing that happened to me in Norway is I went to a festival and there were 17 hardanger fiddles and 13 accordions all on the stage playing together. I have a recording of it. It's the craziest thing. The young people, you know, they're teaching now in the universities, they teach folk music. So there's all kinds of collaborations with jazz and with rock and everything you can imagine is happening.
Have you brought any contemporary sounding pieces for us to hear today?
Well, I did bring a tune that's a little different sounding than the other ones in the sense that it's in minor. A lot of hardanger tunes are major. This one comes from the West Country. They call it Vestland, which is the fjord district. A lot of people who've traveled to Norway, the one thing you do when you're there is you get on a boat and go into the fjords. So if you've been to Norway, this is the area that this tune comes from. It's called Grandfather's Tune, and I learned it from a fiddler called Håkon Høgmu.
That's just beautiful, yeah. Now that's the sound. It's, I guess, because it's in a minor key, maybe that really draws me towards it.
Mm. To me, it seems delicate and strong at the same time. That's something unusual about this music, I think. For my last tune, I'll play a rudl. It's spelled R-U-D-L. It means rolling. So it's a rolling dance tune. It's in 6/8 time, which for the Irish fans out there is like an Irish jig is in 6/8. This isn't really a jig. It's a rudl. And it's a lovely, lovely dance where a couple will dance around. And the Norwegian folk costume has a huge, heavy, long skirt, which has some momentum to it. So as the woman turns, she doesn't have to turn very fast, but that skirt gets turning. And then you just keep turning. You can hardly stop yourself. But the man reaches down and grabs the lower edge of her skirt and holds it out as they turn together, if you can picture that. It's very beautiful. So here's a rudl, also from the West Country of Norway.
Thank you.
can picture them dancing and twirling. That's beautiful. We're talking with Lori Hart in the studios today, and she's brought out another unusual-looking instrument. This one has even more strings than the last one. Lori, what is this that you have now for us to listen to?
There are four playing strings, which sound like this. And then there are 12 sympathetic strings, which sound like this. And those 12 that I just played, I don't actually touch with the bow because they're sunken down into the bridge. So when I play, there's an after ring from those strings. One or more of those strings rings along sympathetically with each note that I play. This is a much larger instrument than a fiddle or a hardanger fiddle. It's probably almost as big as a guitar and as heavy. It's held across the lap like a guitar. The bow goes up and down, and it's a short bow, looks somewhat like a cello bow, I guess you could say. And with my left hand, instead of touching the strings directly the way you do with a guitar or a fiddle, there's a key mechanism where, and that's the clicking that you hear when I play, is me touching this row of wooden keys. There's actually three rows of wooden keys. And when I touch a key, a little peg comes against the string. So that's an open string, and then four fingers on the keys going up to make the string higher. And there's three rows of these keys, so I've got three strings that I can change in that way. And then the lowest string is just a kind of a bass string, which I can hit in the appropriate moment in a tune if I happen to be playing a C chord, because that's a low C, and the other strings are tuned G, C, and A.
How many strings are actually on this instrument?
16. But it's easier to tune than the hardanger fiddle. The hardanger has gut strings. They go out of tune very quickly in temperature and humidity changes. These are steel strings, and they're much more stable.
And how is this instrument used? Is it also something you find in a setting where people are dancing?
Yes, but it's not as much of a solo instrument. It certainly can be a solo instrument, and it will be here today. But it's a great ensemble instrument. I've heard it played with accordion and with fiddle and guitar and bouzouki, all kinds of different instruments, viola. Mm-hmm. One of the famous groups from Sweden, Vessen, is a nickel harp, a viola, and 12-string guitar. That's a great sound.
And so now we are still in Scandinavia, but we have moved from Norway over to Sweden.
Yep. This is a tune called Åkerbystålet. Thank you. So the tune that I just played, Åkerby stole it, is a polska. And a polska is a big category of tunes that are in 3/4 time that are done all over Sweden. And there's different kinds. Some are 16th note polskas and some are 8th note polskas and some are triplet polskas. Some have an even rhythm, some have an uneven rhythm. What's a unifying factor is that they're all in 3-beat time. They're a dance that came maybe originally from Poland. The word polska means Polish, but it's been in Sweden so long that it's really the Swedish national dance. And they are older than waltz and polka and schottische and mazurka. Those are newer dances that came in the 1800s, but the polskas probably go back to the 1700s. And then similarly in Norway, you have the springar. Springar is the older pre-waltz kind of form, pre-accordion, you know, back when there was just fiddles and hardanger fiddles, and they're all couple dances and they're all in 3/4 time. Man and a woman dancing together, turning clockwise but going around a room in a counterclockwise direction, like waltz, but these are the older form of dance. So this instrument nearly went extinct around 1950. There was only about a dozen people left playing it, and its saving was due largely to this guy called Erik Sällström. And he started playing earlier in the century, maybe around 1920. He made the instrument more chromatic. The history of the instrument actually goes back to the 1400s. They've found statues of angels in the dirt around churches in Sweden that play some kind of an instrument like this, way back to the 1300s. It was a simpler instrument back then. It had fewer keys and fewer strings. But Erik Sällström in the 1920s and the people around him in the province of Uppland, which is north of Stockholm, they thought, let's bring this instrument into the 20th century. Let's make it a fully chromatic instrument. And they added keys and they added strings. And he made some compositions which were absolutely beautiful. And people started to learn from him. And he was a maker as well. And he taught people how to make instruments. As the folk revival came in Sweden in the 60s and 70s, there was a furious nationalist folk revival that happened there. And many, many people made nickel harpas at that time. It was like the thing to do when, I don't know, people in America were running around with headbands and tie-dye t-shirts. People in Sweden were making nickel harpas. And so you'll find, you know, lots of houses have them hanging on the wall, most of them probably fairly unplayable. But enough were playable and enough people got interested and learned from Erik and learned his compositions and started writing their own tunes and teaching their own classes and getting other people to make them. And now there's a picture of the nyckelharpa on the 5-kroner bill in Sweden. Thousands of people playing, and you can go to the university and study nyckelharpa and hear it on the radio. And
what does the name mean, nyckelharpa?
Nyckel is a key, like a piano key or a door key, in fact. So a nyckelharpa is a keyed fiddle or a keyed harp. Maybe I'll play a bund polska here. This is called, it translates to a farmer polska. It's got kind of that rough old style. And I was at one festival in Sweden, a nyckelharpa festival actually, where they danced in an old carriage house. And it was, kind of a long room that used to have carriages parked in it. Down the middle, they used to have a row of benches. And when they had dances in this town, the rich people danced on one side and the poor people danced on the other side so they wouldn't have to touch each other. But they danced to the same music. So the musicians sat on the benches in the row down the middle and played basically two parallel dances, which I love. So here's Wendels Polskan. Thank you.
absolutely fascinated by the way that you are playing this instrument. There must be examples of other instruments that use a combination of a key and a bow. I mean, Bowed psaltery.
No keys on it, as far as I know.
No keys.
That's just a series of strings, and you bow the string you want. You don't have to change the pitch. Well, there's the hurdy-gurdy.
The hurdy-gurdy
is a relative of the nickel harpa, I'm quite certain. I'm not sure exactly which came first or how they came together in the past, but the left-hand mechanism on a nickel harpa is very similar to a hurdy-gurdy. A hurdy-gurdy, actually, your hand comes from above, and the nickel harpa comes from below, more like on a guitar. And, of course, the hurdy-gurdy doesn't have a bow. It has a wheel, which you put the rosin right on the wheel and turn the wheel, and the strings are constantly touching the wheel, and so it gives a more continual sound. It sounds sort of like a bagpipe. Mm-hmm. But the way that you actually change the pitch and play the tunes on a hurdy-gurdy is the same left-hand mechanism. Other than that, I don't know of other instruments that have that. I mean, in a way, it's related to an accordion or a piano, I guess. You know, it's keys, but...
What drew you to this? Do you have Norwegian blood in you?
No, nor Swedish. Not that I know of, at least. My mother was from Minnesota, but I think she was Irish. Well, I guess the dance is what drew me. I played fiddle, and I started to go to contra dances. And there's a tradition in New England and New York State in an evening of called contra dances, where you have, you know, a call on her band and do-si-do and circle left and all that. There's usually a point in the evening, maybe halfway through, where there's a break, and they usually do a waltz. And they often throw in a couple of Swedish dances, like schottische, polka, hambo. Of course, polka was known in many other places other than Sweden. But hambo and schottische, maybe some mazurka, other kinds of dances like that, have a place in contra dancing, probably because of all the Scandinavian immigrants to New England. Mm-hmm. So I started to hear the fiddle tunes, the Swedish fiddle tunes, that way. I really got interested in the fiddle music. There's a wonderful harmony playing tradition, which applies to nickel harpa as well. Two nickel harpas together, or a nickel harp and a fiddle, or two fiddles together playing in harmony. And I was very drawn to that. And so that's what started me going to this camp down in West Virginia called Nordic Fiddles and Feet. They bring a whole staff of dance teachers and music teachers from Sweden and Norway, including nickel harpa and hardanger fiddle. So I gave him a try and managed to get hold of instruments, and the rest is history, I guess.
And you've since spent time traveling. You had a Fulbright at one point,
didn't you? Yeah, I had a Fulbright to go to Norway for 3 months. That was a wonderful, wonderful experience. Took a side trip to Sweden, so I got some of the nickel harpa in as well. Right. And then this past summer, I got another grant from the American Scandinavian Foundation. Went back to Sweden this time mostly for a month and did the festival circuit.
So you were playing, you were seeking out people who play this instrument as well?
Trying to get some lessons, dance lessons as well as music lessons. So I was going to the festivals and attending workshops in music and dance, and also getting some private music lessons. And also I interviewed some musicians and dancers there, and I'm doing research. I wrote a bunch of articles for Fiddler magazine after my trip to Norway. After this last shorter trip to Sweden, I would like to maybe someday write a book about Swedish music. So I'm collecting my data and working on that.
And meanwhile, playing and
introducing
other people to the wonderful sound.
Yeah,
of this
I'm doing
instrument.
Quite a bit of teaching on nickel harpa, and even a little bit of teaching on hardanger fiddle, but mostly on regular fiddle.
Yeah.
You can play all these tunes. At least the nickel harpa tunes you can easily transfer over to fiddle. This is a church march, kyrkmarschen in Swedish, and it's written by Olof Jansson.
You're listening to the Rutabaga Roadhouse with Tracy Craig. Our guest today, fiddler Lori Hart, who also plays Norwegian Hardanger fiddle, as well as the Swedish Nyckelharpa. Lori Hart, what's the hardest thing about learning to play one of those instruments?
Well, for me, as someone that already played violin, my challenge was the keys. I mean, it just brought me back to all those piano lessons as a kid when I would hit the wrong note, and I hit the wrong note all the time on this thing. You know, if your finger's just a little bit off, it sounds like a big mistake, whereas on violin, you can cover your mistakes pretty well. They're tiny little mistakes that hardly anybody hears. But I think for someone starting who didn't already play a bowed instrument, the bow is probably a bigger challenge. Because the notes are there right under your fingers if you can be accurate enough to get them. But learning how to make a good sound with a bow is the hard part about violin, and it's the hard part about Nyckelharpa too.
This is a different bow and a different technique, completely different from what you're using on either the fiddle or the Hardanger fiddle.
It doesn't feel that different from violin bow technique for the same kind of tunes from Sweden. You bow pretty much the same way. I mean, it's a different angle. That wasn't hard to get used to. The bowing came quite natural. Well, I should say I did hit myself in the nose the first time I tried it, because the bow actually comes straight. So if you're trying to watch your keys while you play, you bow right into your face. So you quickly learn that you have to just watch from afar and not get your head too close.
So you started out playing fiddle. How old were you when you started?
6 years old.
Oh, a Suzuki kid.
No, it was pre-Suzuki. I think my second teacher had heard of the Suzuki method and used some of the ideas from it. But
so you were making music early on. Was there a lot of music in the house?
My mom was a classical pianist. She accompanied opera singers and ballets and ice shows and things like that. So I was her page turner.
And you ended up going to school for music.
Yeah, I went to Eastman School of Music in Rochester for a couple of years. Dropped out because I started to have a lot of pain in my shoulder. And this was in the early 80s, kind of before people knew too much about music medicine, which has become more of a field now, along with sports medicine. I think people understand a lot more and can help athletes and musicians who have pain when they play. But at that time, I wasn't able to get help with it, and I ended up just totally dropping violin for a couple of years. I had a lot of other interests. It was fine with me. I was interested in foreign languages and anthropology, and transferred to University of Rochester, went on a sailboat for a while, finally ended up in Ithaca, and met a guy I started to play for contra dances, and then I met a guitarist, Bill Coulter, who really encouraged me as a fiddler, and we ended up making an album together in 1992, and I quit my day job and found myself a fiddler again. It was quite a surprise. I really thought that I had left it, and it just came back, but in a different accent, you know, folk music rather than classical. This is a tune that was composed by one of my teachers in Sweden. His name is Puma Hedlund, and it's called Istabussen. Thank you.
What advice would you have for people who are really drawn to the tone, to the sound of the of this? What should they listen to?
Wessen is a great place to start. And the same nickel harpa player from Wessen, who's called Olaf Johansson, also plays in a group called the Nickel Harpa Orchestra. Nickel Harpa Orchestra.
How many are in an orchestra?
Well, it's not really an orchestra. I think it's a gang of six or eight guys.
Yeah.
And they've made three albums that I know of so far. One is an homage to Eric Sahlström. And sometimes they play all together, but some of the cuts on the albums are just one or two or three. You know, nickel harpa is playing together, but it's all nickel harpa, no accompaniment instruments or anything. Yeah, there's a lot of great music coming out of Sweden with nickel harpa in it. The best place for people to go to find out more about either of these instruments is there's an association in America for each instrument. And one is called the American Nickel Harpa Association, spelled NYCKELHARPA, Nickel Harpa, and the Hardanger Fiddle Association of America, HFAA. They both have websites where you can order albums and, you know, see pictures of the instruments and find out who's playing in your area, when the dances are, and yeah, get out and hear some of this music.
This is beautiful. I've really enjoyed having you here on the show today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Lori Hart here at the Rutabaga Roadhouse. Glad you could join us today.